handle the truth. Should we or should we not follow the advice of the galactically stupid?
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
You're all a bunch of fucking assholes. You know why? You don't have the guts to be what you want to be. You need people like me. You need people like me so you can point your fucking fingers and say, that's the bad guy.
Clearly, don't know who you're talking to, so let me clue you in. I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot, and you think that of me? No. I am the one who knocks.
Episode of the Righteous Brick Podcast. I'm your host, J.L. Covlin. It is 10:55 a.m. Eastern on December 21st in the year of our Lord 2020. Thank you for joining me today or whenever you're listening to this. Today is today whenever you listen to this. So if you're listening to this in February of 2022, doing a deep dive because you're a blogger and I just got a show or a special or a presidential appointment, and you want to dig into dirt and find out what the hell I've been doing and if there's any gotcha moments, I think your main problem is there will be too many gotcha moments. It might be a Trump effect. You might be like, this guy has said at least 47 cancelable things. I don't know which one to highlight. So welcome if your today is in 2022, but perhaps your today is Christmas week 2020. So hello, everybody. Merry Christmas. Happy Kwanzaa, Happy New Year, Happy belated Hanukkah, Happy Boxing Day. I know I have some Canadian fans out there. Happy Australian stuff to people who like me in Australia. As I've said, I'd love to tour Canada and Australia as long as there is a high-speed boat that will take me to Australia. I'm not trying to be on this. The reboot of Lost is what I'm saying. And I wonder who I'd be on the reboot of Lost. I'd like to think of myself as a Jack, but probably not. Sawyer, but funnier and less handsome. Maybe the bald guy who was in the wheelchair, spoiler, but was actually not in the wheelchair on the island. I don't really remember much about that. Saeed, I remember him. Basically, I didn't think that show was all that great. I will say, Lost is one of those shows where I have to go, yeah, I'm not a huge fan after the first season. I didn't think it was that awesome. But undeniably, I think the most influential show of the 21st century. I think that's fair to say. I think I'm watching Away right now with Hilary Swank because, you know, there's just not enough astronaut content for me. And I said, well, you know what? The Righteous Girlfriend doesn't share my passion for NASA. And so I'm going to watch this on my own. So I watched two episodes of Away yesterday. That's how far I'm behind on streaming content. I'm like a season behind because there is too much. But episode one of Away, I was like, all right, it was worth giving a try. Episode two was awesome. So now I'm in. And I'm watching this show going, how much fucking money is being spent on programs? Like, I need to get a special and a sketch comedy show before the content bubble bursts. And when it bursts, it's going to be violent and disgusting. And I don't know if HBO Max is too established and has too many reserves being with Time Warner. But I'm wondering if HBO Max will be the first one to sort of flop. Because at some point, it is too much. Like, I'm flaunting my wealth right now, but I just signed up for a year of Peacock just because I could. Talk about peacocking with your Peacock membership. Rock out with your Peacock out. But yeah, I just signed up for Peacock because very little reason. I'll watch a few Hitchcock films there. I want to watch this series, Mr. Mercedes, based on this Stephen King trilogy that I read. So I'd wanted to see that, but that was like only on DirecTV when people thought that was going to be a thing. Like, hey guys, sign up to DirecTV. Not only do we have NFL, but we have two shows you can't find anywhere else. And it was like, yeah, no thanks. So now that's on Peacock. Looking forward to that. It's got Jarrell Jerome, the guy from the Central Park Five, and Brendan Gleeson, who played Trump in The Comey Rule. So it's got, you know, it's a real ass series. So I definitely have wanted to see that. And then when I discovered that was on Peacock, and I said, I know there's a MacGruber series coming to Peacock. I don't know when. Hopefully next year before my year of Peacock runs out. But there really are way too many streaming platforms. I have Apple TV now on my TV. If I were unemployed for a year, it would take a year, as I start to sound like Dave Chappelle. If I were unemployed for a year, I wouldn't be able to make it through all of the content. There's too much. Yeah. And that's one thing. I'm glad I just brought up Chappelle. I'm glad my voices keep infecting and invading my normal voice in life. Much to the chagrin of the Righteous Girlfriend. And shout out to everybody who's enjoying the Mitch McConnell, the latest addition to the pantheon of JL impressions. Dave Chappelle, they just took his show off HBO Max, or they announced it's coming off HBO Max in keeping with what Netflix did, taking it off. Now, I get Netflix and HBO Max wanting to build a strong relationship with Dave Chappelle and show that they're entertainment. They cater to the artist. That's cool. I get it. I understand the business decision behind it. But I have to say, and I've always been a Chris Rock over Dave Chappelle guy, though I did think Dave Chappelle's Age of Spin, the first of his many Netflix specials that have come out since 2015 or 2016, I thought was next level. And I also think it was because that was probably the special that had the most work done, because in other words, he hadn't done a special in like a decade. Then that comes out. That's probably the work and culmination of a lot of work. I thought it was an absolute masterpiece. I really did. It was the first time I thought Dave Chappelle, I know he's a lot of people's favorite, but for me, Dave Chappelle was always a step below Chris Rock. And that's, you know, Bring the Pain, other than maybe anything I can produce. Bring the Pain is probably like, you know, it's the Michael Jordan of my comedy life, that even if there's a special that's better somehow, I may not be able to see that it's better. Because I just have such a formative, foundational love for Bring the Pain. It's just so effing good. It's so amazing, that special. I think it is stand-up comedy at its highest form. He makes points. You may not agree with them, but he makes societal critiques. He makes relationship points. He does all this stuff. All through killer comedy. There's never a 5-minute monologue about getting, Eli, let me break it down for you. I want to talk to you about something. It's none of that. It is killer A-plus comedy from moment one till the moment he throws the fucking mic down. And I don't know if anything will ever surpass Bring the Pain in my heart and in my mind. But Age of Spin was the first and probably only thing I've seen Chappelle do where I was like, that was Bring the Pain level. That was at the higher level. And I think it was because he wasn't, it was a comeback of sorts. It was a allow me to reintroduce myself sort of moment in terms of stand-up. But he wasn't churning out this like, I just had some thoughts over the last 6 months and I'm funny, so let me put it out. It was a real killer special. And I think we need as comics to maybe, you know, this is what I try to do with my comedy, but I think people need to realize comedy is not just some funny, it shouldn't just be a funny guy. Like, that's what podcasting is for. Like, podcasting is good reps, good communication with fans, good daily, you know, weekly sort of updates and riffs. But we've sort of lost this idea that like, oh, if I'm funny, I can just, it's now like if I'm really funny, I can get up there and just kind of talk and it's going to end up being funny. Now, when a Dave Chappelle does that versus just some regular dude, of course it's going to be funnier. But Dave Chappelle should be, what I would prefer is for a Dave Chappelle to put in that work, that real work, and say, just because I can release three specials in 18 months and they'll all be B+, look at what I can do when I give it that time, that real time that specials used to get so that they would be special. Age of Spin to me was so damn good. And as a, yeah, it was like, damn, like this was next level. This was like a Dave Chappelle, Barry Bonds thing where it's like, oh, I always liked Ken Griffey Jr. more than Barry Bonds. But with steroids, Barry Bonds all of a sudden went to this next level where you were like, holy shit. And obviously Dave Chappelle was not on steroids for comedy, but it felt like that. It felt like, oh, wow, he's elevated his game later in the game than I expected. Whereas, you know, Chris Rock, I think, is still really good, but I think his peak is behind him, whereas Chappelle showed he could have a new peak. But now he's just in this kind of cranking out. I'm just giving fucking talks. And that's whatever. People like it. That's fine. But it did irk me. And I did put a thread on Twitter like a couple of weeks ago with the Chappelle thing where he was doing this, like he was saying, I know it's legal, but it isn't right, about Comedy Central selling his material to, you know, for millions to Netflix and HBO Max and Chappelle not getting any piece of it. Now, Chappelle is rich. And Comedy Central, the rumors had it when Chappelle quit the show that they were offering him, I think it was $50 million for a third season because it had established itself as this just rainmaker of a, in terms of DVD sales, etc. Chappelle turned that down, if that's true. But here's the thing. Chappelle, in 2003 or 2, whenever the show debuted, was already a comedy headliner. He had been in several movies. He was an A-list stand-up comedian who's was about to blow up, and he and his agent, and I'm assuming he had top tier representation. I don't think he was fucking using his Hotmail account like some of us to book gigs and deals. And they signed off on a deal. And Comedy Central, when it came time for that third season, they obviously were willing to pony up generational wealth to Dave Chappelle, and he turned it down for reasons that I think were admirable, but he signed that deal. And I'm not one of these people who's like, you signed the deal like this, but this isn't an NFL running back where they can cancel your contract anytime. Like, the NFL is a fucking disgrace. There should be a huge strike in that sport, and I don't know why there isn't. And it's probably because a lot of quarterbacks who would be the leaders of it because of their wealth and position don't join in. But man, NFL is fucking mercenary shit. It's like, here's your $100 million contract. Thank you. Oh, what's that? You got injured? We're canceling $90 million of it. Bye. Dave Chappelle signed a deal as a established comedian with presumably top flight representation. And he doesn't like the deal now because streaming showed up. And to be fair, streaming did not exist. Streaming didn't exist when he signed his deal. So would it have been nice if Comedy Central had said, hey, Dave, here, thank you for your, we're partnering with you. We're going to do right by you. Yes, that would have been nice. But here's my point. And I've told this story before. In 2010, I was approached by a company called New Wave Dynamics. They used to be a comedy management group that managed me for about 4 months before they fired my manager and then dumped me. And they represented at the time Dane Cook, who was the biggest comedy star in the world, as far as stand-up comedy goes. And they dumped me, and my career sort of just, you know, I thought I was on like a real high streak in 07, 08, and then I just sputtered out and thought I could go full-time to comedy. And it didn't work out like that, obviously. But they approached me in 2010, and I had now released two albums. That was I was 2 years away from my third album coming out, probably at a low point in my career. I don't know if, I think it might have been the lowest point in my career. I remember I was at the Boston Comedy Festival, and I was walking around by myself, as one is to do when they're doing comedy shows. And I get a call, 818 number. I'm like, holy shit. And you see what I'm doing right now? This is for podcasting. This isn't for the stage. That's my whole point with Chappelle. I consider what I'm doing right now horrible comedy. but it's not meant to be comedy. It's a podcast. And I get a call, 818, and any entertainer with optimism will go, 818, that's Los Angeles. I better pick this up. This might be a TV station wanting to give me a show. So I pick it up, and it's somebody from New Wave Dynamics. They had sort of morphed from the management age to the content age. And they were telling me, they gave me this big pitch of like, hey, we love what you're doing. And I'm like, you do? Because you dumped me as a client 2 years ago and I haven't heard from you since. And I wasn't even like a signed client. They were just doing the thing where I guess they scoop up 50 people and hope that five turn into something. And they said, yeah, we're creating a sort of catalog that's going to be very well publicized. And we want to partner with you. We want to secure the rights or whatever, however they phrased it, to your albums. We will take, you know, a portion of sales, but our profile will be so high because we will be compiling the largest catalog of comedy content. And that will be a big boost to you. When you're associated, we will promote your stuff, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, let me think about it. And I had this gnawing, gross feeling in my stomach where I was like, I don't know what they know, but I know they know something. And I know I'm being taken for a fool. I just don't know how. And that healthy skepticism has served me so well in comedy. I am not a star. I'm not where I want to be. But, and I've told this story before, retroactively, I now know that New Wave Dynamics, which would become Comedy Dynamics, which is now the undisputed king of content production, what they were doing is building up their catalog. Now, I was not important to them, clearly. I would have been a client of theirs if I was still important. But what was important was selling this, we want to promote your stuff. They were probably saying that to 50 comedians, if not more, because they wanted to compile a library and then market that library as the largest treasure trove of comedy content. Now, this was 2010. This was not 2003 like Chappelle, but I had not yet received a single check from streaming, Pandora, YouTube, Spotify. I don't even know if those fucking things existed. And satellite radio was growing, but even if I had gotten a little airplay on Sirius, I had not received a check, a notice of anything. So I didn't know any. I just thought clubs and album sales. But you have to believe that a company like Comedy Dynamics, because I was only like 3 years, 4 years away from getting my first Sound Exchange checks. Now, that's me as an ignorant, you know, middle act comedian, not knowing anything about the business. I have to believe that big wigs at New Wave Dynamics, which would become Comedy Dynamics, had to know the future. And they weren't telling me shit. They were basically saying, we'll promote you, which will be you with no promotion equals X. But if we promote you, that'll be like 10X. So if we take 5X, you're still left with 5X, which is a lot more than your original X, for a little basic algebra, comedy exploitation math. And I just, in my gut, I said, no, I'm not stupid. This feels like I'm being taken. I don't know how. It just feels like it is. Now, as I've said on this podcast, between 2015 and this year, I have made six figures in streaming royalties. And half of that would have gone most likely to Comedy Dynamics as sort of the arts owner. I would have maintained all artist ownership. And they do these deals on all their albums. They sign huge artists, give them good deals. The real money is made in streaming, having the ownership of that streaming, and in the aggregate, compiling hundreds of comedians' material and taking half of their shit in perpetuity. And I just said no. And because of that, I was able to pay bills during very lean years because I would get these miracle payments like, oh shit, $2,800 this month from Sound Exchange. Perfect. That would have only been $1,350 if I'd given away the ownership rights. And I needed $2,600 this month to pay my bills. So I obviously have a very a wary eye for the comedy industry for so many reasons. I have little faith in their talent development, mainly because I haven't been developed. but also because I almost got taken and didn't even know it was coming. And I look at that and I say, no, I'm a smart guy and I'm a cautious guy by nature. I got burned once with my comedy career. I will hopefully never let it happen again. But I was also a fucking nobody in the business with no reps. And I knew to say, yeah, I don't feel like this is good. Now, whatever deal you signed, Dave Chappelle, with Comedy Central, even if you didn't know, your agent should have been more aware. You obviously sold those rights in perpetuity. You obviously sold them the rights, like they paid you up front. And yes, he says, it isn't right. It isn't, it's legal, but it isn't right. Well, you know what? Hard for me to be sympathetic. Like maybe it's just the position I'm in, but I said no when the temptation couldn't have been greater and the need for promotion for myself was never greater. And I said no because I was like, I don't trust you guys. Your show business vultures are a cliche for a reason because they're fucking all out there. And for Dave Chappelle and his agent to sign away, to not have any vision for the future or any caution, and then for it to become some Dave Chappelle is the freedom fighter for artists, please. I'm just saying, like, this idea, and this goes back to my gripe about Kevin Hart. Like, the industry always said no to me. The industry said no. They said no to me, and I just kept fighting. You got to keep grinding. You got to keep working, and that's the key. You got to keep grinding. And when the industry was saying no to me, I said, I'm going to keep grinding, keep working. And, you know, the lesson is you got to do for yourself. You got to do for yourself. And it's like, oh, you're such a fucking Tony Robbins motivational speaker, Kevin Hart. But the times that you're talking about when Hollywood was saying no to you, is that when you were 26 years old and headlining clubs and starring in the movie Soul Plane? Now, we can laugh at the movie Soul Plane, but let's be honest. If I was headlining clubs and starring in shitty movies right now, I would not be saying the industry is rejecting me. I would be saying, yes, I will buy that $2 million home and the righteous girlfriend need not work and Cookie's getting another dog friend. Like, I'd be like, yeah, the industry has said yes enough to me. Maybe not all the yeses, but this narrative, there's so many comics out there that have management or had management build them up. But then when they're on their own or it's not, they claim to be like these solo fucking warriors against the system. And with Kevin Hart, it's just a bigger example of that where I'm like, I don't understand. Like at 40, you were saying the industry kept telling you no, but you were on your seventh like concert movie, your 15th movie. And I'm sorry, I consider starring in a movie that gets released in 1500 theaters and headlining clubs at 26 to be making it. Maybe not making it to the next to the level that you eventually get to, but that sounds like a lot of yeses occurred in that time. So comedy is just full of these false Horatio Alger stories and these false, I'm just me fighting up against the man. I mean, sorry, I just, and for me, it's hard for me to have sympathy or be like, yes, fighting. Comedy Central took you, and you shouldn't have been taken, and you should have known better, and they didn't do anything grimy or illegal. Your agent maybe is the one you need to put on blast on Instagram, maybe more than Comedy Central, and I have no love for Comedy Central. I have no love for any of these places, but it's just weird to hear all that. And people going, yes, yes, Dave, speaking out, speaking up. And it's like, yeah, no, it's so great the guy worth like $70 million is finally like speaking back and that he should really be worth $85 or $95 million. That's truth to power. Fuck out of here. I don't even know why I went on that tangent. I don't know what this started as. I've had a great year, but I'm happy and proud of the year I've had because it has been 100% fan driven. YouTube views, cameo orders, album purchases, and my own skills getting, you know, paid work from different sort of entities. It's not the career I want, but it would be hard for me to be like, and I would have more of a claim. Like, the industry is the only thing that hasn't come calling. There was a great article in the LA Times last week about me and the New York Star Ledger. Everybody except the industry has sort of opened their arms to me, and I'm very thankful for that. But Cameo. I'll tell you guys. Well, Cameo on a per month basis has been the biggest moneymaker for me this year, and I hit a big milestone on Cameo. So the Righteous Girlfriend got me a cake. And that felt good. You know, after all these years of my girlfriend rejecting me and saying no, she finally opened her arms and said yes to me. Kevin Hart, when doing well on Cameo, folks. But all that is all self-driven and fan-driven, and it's meaningful in that way, but it's also sort of like, but yet still, no industry love, no management love. So my January is going to be basically me trying to either get an agent and or pitch a sketch hour and a stand-up hour. So we'll see how that goes. Hopefully there's some buyers. And like I said, nobody buys it. Fortunately, I now have the cash reserves to do an A-plus self-production and then try to sell it, or then hopefully sell it to fans. So that would be all right. But I guess I was talking about Away. I was talking about Astronauts, right? Didn't that start off? But yeah, Away, looking good. Not sure what the fuck I was talking about before then. But who cares? That's what this podcast is, right? It's a bunch of unfinished sentences. Enjoying Away. I know I had some things to talk about, but, you know, I should probably just get back to work. Now that my work computer is working. But Cameo, I've given my proudest thing, my biggest brag this year. The only way I'll brag about cash, I think, is I've given now 18K to charity. How about that? That I'm comfortable bragging about, at least on the podcast, not like for everybody, but for the podcast. I just gave $5,000 to Hope for Haiti this weekend. And then $1,000 to Feeding America, which I've given $3,000 to my church. And then the rest were like Giving Tuesday and then my monthly donations to, World Food Program. But I gotta say, it's one of those things that I don't really need anything right now. I don't know what to get anybody for Christmas other than my nephew. I told my brother I'd buy him a couch. He needs a couch for the house, and I figured that would be like a gift for the whole family for Christmas. So he said yes to that, and we'll figure out when we can get that done. I don't know. But it felt good to give to charity. It felt like the same as buying stuff for myself, giving to charity, because I was like, I don't really know. Like, I can't do anything. At least I'm doing something good with my money, especially during a year when shit has hit the fan for so many people. But I was, then I saw Mackenzie Bezos, or Mackenzie Smith, I think, or Scott. Jeff Bezos' ex-wife, Mackenzie. I'm on a first name basis. You know, we run in the same philanthropic circles. But I noticed that she's given away like $4 billion. And I was just like, is this chick doing the Sarah Cooper of philanthropy on me? Like, I'm out here raining charity on these hoes. And then all of a sudden she's like, I gave, pulled out my pocket and dropped $9 million for this junior college. And this library, pissed out $5 million. And to this school system, I gave $1 billion. And I'm like, you're totally shitting on my very significant philanthropic contributions, Mackenzie. Okay, you didn't have to do it the same week that I was doing it. You could have let me have my moment before, you know, Netflix gave you a philanthropic special. But yeah, it feels good. And I look up these charities to make sure they get like good grades for their charitable work. I gave like a fat donation to Pete Dominic's charity that he's partnered with. So it feels good, I guess. It does. But, you know, then you're just stuck at home still doing legal work and trying to figure out where the hell your comedy career is going. So that was a good rant on Chappelle and Kevin Hart and other comedians that I didn't name, and a philanthropic update. But yeah, that's, you know, I figure in a year where I've had so much good fortune, and on a relative basis, absurdly good fortune, if you look at the rest of society, at least as far as my career goes, obviously there's been loss in my family. Personally, not a great year, but professionally, an undeniably successful year. Maybe not exactly the success I want, but undeniably successful. So I figured, yeah, you got to tithe when you can. And I'm still, I think, a ways away from tithing, but yeah, it feels good. That's something, you know, because what else? Sitting around streaming You know, figuring out what to get the righteous girlfriend. She's been very unhelpful because I think she's set her mind on some particular things that are not in my possession right now. You know, very difficult to get for her right now. So at least I can give charity to people and feel good about that. But other than that, folks, I think we can keep this episode short. I bitched about comedy in a different way, and I talked about charity. And I guess everybody should have a Merry Christmas, right? And a Happy Kwanzaa and all that stuff. If you're not, you know, go subscribe to my YouTube channels, 3 of them now, because the Making Podcast Great Again podcast is very close to monetization. So if you're already subscribed to 1 or 2 of my channels, please subscribe to the podcast channel as well. Just literally a click of the button while you're logged in and that's it. Like, you don't even have to watch the videos, although please watch the videos. You know, check out Making Podcast Great Again. If you need a last minute gift, my cameos are 24-hour turnaround. I'm usually turning them around in like 6 hours, but they're 24-hour turnaround guaranteed for last-minute gifts, and they are a raging success. I think I'm probably – I have to be one of the most, if not the most successful, non-really famous people on the whole fucking site this year. I'll just leave it at that. In 8.5 months, I hit a threshold that was pretty impressive, and my liaison at Cameo was very impressed. Almost startled. I think I just fell into her lap randomly. They were like, here's another fucking Twitter schmuck who might make a couple bucks. Little did they know I would become a fucking Cameo mogul this year. So you can get a Cameo. And if you need something cheaper for yourself or for a friend, you got to check out those albums. Come on, folks. If you haven't already, stream them, maybe stream a few, buy one if you got the money, or gift somebody who's a stand-up fan. I think I'm like legit enough that you could actually gift it without being weird. You know what I mean? Like a year ago, it'd have been like, who the fuck is this? They're like, oh, he's a comic. I really like him. I think you'd like him too. Now they'd be like, oh, is this that motherfucker from Twitter and YouTube? Okay. Oh, he does stand-up too? I'll check it out. It might not be as weird to gift my albums this year as in previous years. I guess, you know, the usual shtick. Sign up for my newsletter. Hopefully there will be announcements coming in 2021 about shows and other things. But sign up for that at the bottom of my homepage of my revamped website, jlcovan.com. jlcomedy.com will take you there as well. And I think that's all the announcements we need. All my social media links are on the website if you've been missing out on one or a couple of the things. This is always really boring because I can't muster the enthusiasm. Patrice O'Neill on his second album actually mocked me for my lack of enthusiasm during announcements. He said, did you hear JL, this motherfucker? If I was Harlan Williams, I'd smack the shit out of him. Because I was like, coming to the club next week is Harlan Williams. So if you like him, come check him out. And then Patrice just came on and ripped me for my lack of enthusiasm for announcing Harlan Williams shows. So I guess other than that, I'll give you an update. Hopefully I'll be done with Away by next week and give a full review. I will also be watching Mank and what's her name? The Black Bottom, the Viola Davis blues singer movie. I'll be watching that. Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. You know, and then also Wonder Woman 2 and Soul. Too much content, folks. Just too much gosh darn content. It's really frustrating and annoying. And you just got to... You got to not treat it like work, because that's what they want you to do. They want you to feel like you're obligated and like it's a job. Also, something I said on my 2012 album, Too Big to Fail, the track labeled Netflix. So check that out, guys. Very prescient, as is most of my comedy. Okay, so we're done here. I'm sleepy. I need my tea and nuts snack. I think that's why I'm fading so quickly. I didn't have my good fats and my... flavonoids or whatever the fuck they put in tea that's supposed to be good for you. And then I guess that's it, right? We're done? We're done. I think you're done. I think you stopped listening a few minutes ago. So thank you for listening. Merry Christmas, everybody. I'm sure I'll do an episode next week, but I did dawn on me. I like haven't taken any time off this whole fucking year for either podcast, for anything. But I guess it would be easier if there was something to do. But I'd be less likely to want to take a week off if there was something to do, because I'd be like, okay, I'll just record in advance and post it. But like with nothing to do, I'm like, do I have to do this every Monday? God damn it. And you're probably thinking the same thing. So, and by the way, the numbers have gone up slightly in the last like month for Righteous Prick. So thank you. Thank you to all you consistent listeners. And thanks to anybody who's picked it up recently. Much appreciated. You know, not always funny, not always happy, sometimes hysterical, but always you get to the heart and soul of who JL is, and who that is a frustrated, possibly pre-diabetic piece of shit. So thank you, everybody, for sharing this journey with me on your Tuesday or Wednesday or whatever day you choose to listen. Have a great week. Stay safe. Stay healthy. Get the vaccine if you can. I know I'm going to tell my mom to get the vaccine. She's 77, so she's in the 77? 76. Excuse me, Mom, who doesn't listen to this. So I know she's in a group that'll be able to get it a lot faster than me, so that's good. Get vaccinated. Stay safe. Don't be an anti-masker. Don't hang out with anti-maskers. Don't talk to your family members if they're Trump supporters. Shun them. Humiliate them. You know, all the good things that the good Lord would teach us. have a good week, guys, and I will see you next Tuesday.